It's time to sit back, relax, and listen to Conversations with Joan. Conversations with Joan will inspire, motivate, and empower you. Live your best life now. Listen, learn, think, and decide. And now, here's your host, Joan Herman.
Welcome to Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life's Conversations with Joan. I'm Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in. Conversations with Joan focuses on topics that are important to your life, from health and wellness to professional development to personal well-being. Change makers join me to share their insights, tips, and strategies so you can thrive and live your best life now. Thank you for taking time for yourself, and thank you for letting us be a part of your life. Now, let's start talking. Many people are struggling with anxiety, depression, and burnout. Today's guest, Dr. Greg Kammer, contends that there's a path toward personal resilience that can be implemented by anyone, anywhere, in just a few minutes a day. He joins us to talk about his GAIN method that can improve mental, emotional, and physical health. Dr. Hammer is a professor at Stanford University School of Medicine, a physician, best-selling author, and mindfulness expert. He's the author of the book, GAIN Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. Welcome, Dr. Hammer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you, Joan.
So, Doctor, many people today are really struggling. What do you believe is leading to the anxiety and depression that they're feeling?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know how old you are, Joan, and I won't ask you, but I'm actually in my seventh decade, meaning I'm in my 60s, and I've never experienced anything like what's going on now. I think there are stressors for all of us that are unprecedented. Certainly the pandemic, it just has had such a negative impact on so many people for so many reasons. And then we have our politics. I've never experienced anything like what is happening right now with the divide between people. So many families have members that don't speak with each other because of their political views. And, you know, you really have to be careful before you speak your mind in a group because there's probably somebody there who disagrees with you vehemently. And then the wars going on in Ukraine and in Gaza, you know, at least unprecedented in my life where there's just been so much violence and death and destruction among innocent people. I think, you know, our young people are worried about whether there'll be a planet for their children and grandchildren, this eco-anxiety that many of us share. If you're a teenager or a child, should I wear a bulletproof vest to school today? Am I a boy or a girl? I mean, there's just a long list of relatively unprecedented events that are creating great stress among kids, adults, parents, everybody. And I think naturally we're all stressed.
And I think, Doctor, too, the rate of this information coming at us, I'm pretty much around your age, and we had three television stations when we were growing up and a daily newspaper, and you could get away from it. But with the media today and social media, and it just feels like there's no escape. It's just coming at us at a continual rate. And I don't know how you avoid burnout when we're living like this.
Yes, absolutely. So I think that begs the question, Joan, what is burnout? And I think I like to keep it simple. A simple explanation of burnout is simply the emotional and physical exhaustion that we experience related to chronic stress. And so, you know, we're talking about stress and chronic stress, and it really is a game changer. It ages us, actually. We have objective data showing that stress changes our DNA. It changes the way our chromosomes function. The little telomeres at the tips of our chromosomes degrade and become shorter with stress. And I think that stress is one of the factors that actually causes a significant deterioration in our physiology and ages us, along with oxidative stress, for example, chronic inflammation. But stress is right up there. And, you know, fortunately, it's something that we can do something about. At least we can reduce it, if not eliminate it.
And that's where we get our power, Doctor, because when we're under stress, we feel like everything is outside of our control. And while we may not be able to control what's happening out there, we can always control our response to it.
That is exactly right. And so, you know, there's a formula in my first book, suffering equals pain times resistance. So the pain is there. You know, no one gets out of this life without substantial pain. We lose loved ones. Many of us lost loved ones during COVID. The pain is there. but it's how we respond to it. It's if we resist it, again, suffering equals pain times resistance. If our resistance is increased rather than the opposite, which is acceptance, the suffering increases. And I think it's the same with stress. You know, stress could be also perceived as discomfort times resistance. So we all have discomfort. How do we deal with it? And, you know, I would actually define resilience as the ability to cope with acute stress and prevent it from becoming chronic stress. And it can be adaptive. The acute stress response can help us flee from danger or stay and fight if we're faced with a foe or a predator. But we don't want those physiologic changes associated with the acute stress response to endure. And if it does, then it becomes chronic stress.
Do you think this stress that we're keeping within ourselves, it's almost bottled up, and on some people it's erupting. And, you know, when I look at social media, and social media has a benefit and there's a place for it, but the way you see people communicating with one another, it's almost like something is being unleashed within us. And there's this nastiness and this anger, and everyone's fighting with each other. Do you think it's because of this bottling up of stress?
Well, you know, chronic stress certainly does erode our ability to be patient and accepting. You know, we may talk about the what I think are the four pillars of happiness, and they're gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment. And when we're stressed, we become less of all of those gain elements, if you will. We become less grateful. We tend to be more negative. We are less accepting. We are less intentional. We tend to get derailed. We have a plan in terms of our lifestyle. When we're chronically stressed, that plan tends to be eroded. And the end and gain is non-judgment, and we become more judgmental when we're stressed. So, yes, I think that all of those vital components of healthy living and happiness are definitely adversely affected by chronic stress.
The gain method that you just described, what does it take for us to implement the pillars and make a shift?
Well, you know, Joan, we have ways in which our brains are wired that appear to interfere with our ability to be de-stressed and happy. And they, for example, I'll mention two things about the way our brains have evolved and are now hardwired. We all have a negativity bias. You know, we tend to remember the negative and forget the positive. And I think we can all think of examples of that in our lives. I tell a story in the book. I'm a physician. I work in the operating room in the intensive care unit. And one day I'm working with a wonderful, brilliant female resident, and we have four difficult cases in the operating room, and she does an amazingly wonderful job taking care of them. They all end up comfortable at the end of the procedure, and their vital signs are stable, and everything went really, really well thanks to her. She did a lot of procedures. She did them all perfectly well, other than one. We had to put a little catheter in an artery in a baby, and she was unable to do that successfully, so I stepped in and did it. And at the end of the day, we debriefed. I gave her an A+. We discussed all the things that she did well. So she goes home. She tells me this the next day. She has dinner with her husband. She has a, you know, nice evening. She's going to bed. She's sort of taking stock of the events of the day. And what does she think about when she's going to bed as she reviews how the day went? Mm-hmm. Does she think about the 99%+ of things that went well, or that one little procedure that she missed? And of course, she focuses on the latter, and she's, darn, I missed that arterial catheter. Dr. Hammer had to step in and do it. And that's just a good example of our negativity bias. We'll pick out that one thing that we consider a negative, or something that didn't go well, or something uncomfortable or painful, in the midst of lots of joyous and wonderful events. And that's our negativity bias. So that's one way our brains are wired that interferes with our happiness. And another way is that we have a very difficult time being present. Our minds quickly go to the future and the past, excessively, I'd say. We sort of have an obsession with the future and past in ways that are maladaptive. And of course, it's adaptive to remember wonderful times with friends and family. That's a way of considering the past that's adaptive. But in general, our negativity bias creeps in and we overthink the past, and that generates a lot of shame and regret. And likewise with the future, it's important to plan for the future, to put bread on the table, to look forward to good times. But we overthink the future, and with our negativity bias, we generate a lot of fear and anxiety. So we have these two traits that are baked in or hardwired into our brains. So what we need to do is rewire our brains. Our brains have this magical quality called neuroplasticity, and we could take advantage of that and rewire our brains, but it takes the I in gain, which is intention. It takes a plan that we need to stick to, just like taking care of our bodies. And so, yes, we're capable of actually changing and rewiring our brains toward a happier way of being.
When you look at the gain method you just described, gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment, what is the first thing you recommend? Is there one pillar that may be more important when getting started?
That's a great question. I think, no, they're all equally important, and they're all very much interwoven. So certainly gratitude is critical. You know, there's a lot of information, data about having a gratitude practice, whether you journal things for which you're grateful, or you just go to things for which you're grateful when you're going to sleep or what have you. You know, and we can imagine somebody who's poor and happy, or somebody who is physically challenged and happy, but I think it's hard to even imagine somebody who's ungrateful and happy. So just from our empiric experience, gratitude is essential. So we can start with that. But I think just being grateful isn't really enough, because we can't just pretend that life is full of things for which to be grateful. There are definitely uncomfortable, painful experiences in life, and we need to have a practice of accepting those if we're going to really be happy. And I think that one way of accepting uncomfortable things is to go to our gratitude. But I do think we have to sit with these things, learn how to cope with them in order to be happier. And I would say the same for intention and non-judgment. They're very much interwoven. And so I think all of them are important. But I guess if you're just going to pick one, then start with gratitude.
And you know, we're a society of quick fixes. People just want to take a pill and have something be over with. So if someone was looking to make lasting change and create new neural pathways, how long will it take someone to see a difference in their life?
I think it can be a matter of days, in fact. I mean, our brains have become hardwired with this negativity bias and this distraction with the past and future. But we're not going to change that overnight, but we're not going to eliminate those things, maybe ever, but we can actually make little baby steps in the right direction almost immediately. So let me just give you an example, the gain practice. So we get up in the morning, we open the blinds, we do our morning hygiene, we find a comfortable place to sit, hopefully a quiet place that's comfortable, our favorite chair. There's not much going on otherwise in the room. Find that comfortable, quiet place, sit, and then we close our eyes, we focus on the breath, we slow it down, we deepen it into a count of three through our nose, pausing to a count of three and letting the breath go, exhaling slowly to a count of four. We do this a few times. It activates our parasympathetic nervous system through the vagus nerve, calms us down, slows our heart rate, brings our blood pressure down, actually brings our blood sugar down. And then we go through a, you know, 45-second or so contemplation, beginning with that for which we're grateful. And we all have much for which to be grateful. We can focus on relationships with somebody that we love, our community, perhaps our work. In my case, I'm grateful for that. A pet that we love, our relative health, even if it's not perfect, our relative safety, having a safe place to live compared to others in the world. So we can just spend a few moments contemplating things for which we're grateful. Then we transition to the A in gain, which is acceptance. And here, as we breathe slowly and deeply, we actually contemplate an experience that's uncomfortable or even painful, maybe a conflict with a spouse or a friend. And we bring this sensation, this experience in. We imagine opening our chest, opening our heart, bringing this experience into our heart, linking it to our breath, and just sitting with it, relaxing our body, breathing into this sensation. And then we move to intention. And as I said, one issue that we have is that we're very distracted with the future and the past, and happiness is really in the present moment for the most part. So here we may just exercise our intention to consider our current sensations, the pressure of the chair against our body, the sound perhaps of a car or an airplane going by in the distance, the slightly sweet aroma of the air we're breathing, the expansion of our chest, our belly as we breathe slowly and deeply. So we're sort of linking our intention to be present to the breath. And then we transition to the yin and gain, which is non-judgment. And one way to connect with non-judgment is to, as we breathe slowly and deeply, consider an image of the Earth apparently floating in space, one of these beautiful NASA images, and consider that the Earth is, it's beautiful, but it really is just a planet. It's neither good nor bad, just the planet that it is. And we link this to our breath and consider that it's only logical, therefore, to understand that we are just humans. We're neither good nor bad. I am just a person. I am neither good nor bad. I'm just the person that I am. And then we kind of link this I am-ness to the breath, return to full focus on the breath for 30 seconds or so, and then we open our eyes. And the reason I say that this kind of practice can have an immediate impact is, so I have my gain 3 or 4 minute meditation, I have my cup of coffee, I get in the car, I'm driving to work, and somebody driving in the lane to my right moves over ahead of me, maybe cuts me off a bit, no turn signal, and I start to formulate all these judgments about the driver, right? And I realize I just did my gain meditation and I focused on non-judgment, so I have a little laugh to myself that here I am judging again, and I maybe get a little hit of dopamine and a little bit of humor. And that's instead of a little hit of adrenaline and aggravation. And so every time we have these light bulb moments when we're not being in conformity with these gain elements, the more we do it, the more we have these light bulb moments and we can have a laugh at ourselves and rewire our thoughts, go to something grateful or accepting or non-judgmental. And so I think this can happen very quickly once we embrace this practice.
So earlier I said that we are a society that's suffering. There are a lot of people that are really hurting today. And then I mentioned that people are looking for a quick fix. So when they're hurting, they go to their doctor and oftentimes they're handed a pill. And there is always a place for medication. It always has a place in certain people's lives. But do you think that by practicing a program like GAIN, that people, certain people, may be able to avoid being over-medicated? And the second part is, do you think more doctors are starting to realize the importance of this?
I do think that we, as a society of physicians and other healthcare providers, are beginning to recognize the adverse effects of chronic stress, as we ourselves, of course, experience them. There is a very gradual righting of the ship, if you will. It's not going to happen overnight, but we are recognizing that we need to take care of ourselves, for example, and this affects the way we take care of our patients. And, there's changes in the medical school curriculum gradually toward this recognition. So there is a gradual change in the medical community to recognize that self-care is important, that these elements of reducing chronic stress are vital. So I think there is a change, a very, very gradual change in this sort of mentality among those in the medical profession. And this is affecting the way we take care of people. And I think it will, if it's not already a little bit at least, maybe have us veer away from immediately prescribing medications. And I think for the rest of us, it may, the recognition that we're in control of our minds, we can actually reduce stress through, being in nature, having the GAIN practice, mindfulness has become a real buzzword and has become much more popular. And that's really what the GAIN practice is. It's a form of mindfulness meditation. So I think we as a society are realizing that we can live in a more harmonious way with ourselves, our physiology, and others, and the world. And this will have an effect on the immediate impulse to seek medication or prescribe medication. And so I do think that's happening. It's a very slow, gradual process, of course.
The book is Gain Without Pain, The Happiness Handbook for Healthcare Professionals. If you'd like to learn more about Dr. Hammer and his work, you can visit greghammermd.com. Doctor, in about 30 seconds or less, what's the takeaway?
I think the takeaway is that, first of all, you're not alone. If you feel that this negativity and maybe depression that you have is your dirty little secret, or that you're alone in feeling this way, you're not. We are all prone to being negative and having a bit of depression. We are all experiencing chronic stress. So I think it's really important for people to recognize that they are not alone. And, you know, this is something that they can be more open with their friends and family and discuss their feelings and share remedies. And there is help. You know, I think we have a lot of pathways for self-help. And again, this is not your dirty little secret. We're all wired this way.
Dr. Hammer, thank you so much for joining us.
Joan, it's really been a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. I hope you found the show informative. At Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life, we believe that knowledge is power. Take what you've learned, apply it, and live your best life now. Remember that the information provided is the opinion of our guest and should never replace the advice of a professional who knows your personal situation. If you'd like more information, visit our website, CYACYL.com. That stands for Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life. While on our site, listen to past shows on demand, read the digital magazine, sign up for our mailing list, and be sure to follow the show on social media. Until next time, this is Joan Herman. Thanks for tuning in.